This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I saw the team sheet and saw David Silva wasn't playing, Aguero wasn't playing, when Sterling wasn't playing, I thought they must be worried about Aston Villa rather than Real Madrid.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Oh, a terrific goal! A fantastic goal by Milosevic. Milosevic, they called him. Well, he didn't miss this one.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com and your host for what is the 100th show. Not really, because we've done about 130. It's just the way we label them, but this is 100, and why not have the what century episode about a Wembley Cup final. Joining me, Mr. Chris Budd, as usual.
Hello.
And out of quarantine for coronavirus, Dan Rogers. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's an affliction that I get most times following Villa between January and March. I get this high fever as our form collapses beneath our feet, and only this time it seems to coincide with the genuine end of the world. So it's a joy to be here on the 100th and Prophet of Doom podcast ahead of our 9-0 defeat at Wembley.
This podcast still marches on, although we'll see how bulletproof we are after the Wembley extravaganza.
Listen, when archaeologists do dig up the world after and find us many millions of years, they'll find this podcast and it'll be next to a fossilized Villa dog and Balti pie, and they'll put two into this primitive civilization.
And some alien will go, God, well, they won't stop swearing.
They won't stop swearing.
Right,
spineless
anyway.
Cunts.
Oh dear. Coming up in this show, we will obviously focus on the incoming clash of the Titan and Aston Villa in the League Cup final. We will catch up on a few things about Wembley. I just happened to have a couple of hours ago just come back from a meeting with West Midlands Police and the Met. The Met Police were on a conference call where I found out the ins and outs of what is happening on the day. So we'll feed some of that to you. Also, we'll have a quick 3 points just to see what is happening in the coronavirus-infested European football world. And then we'll crack on. And the emphasis will be on how can we beat? Is it possible to beat Manchester City at Wembley?
Anything is possible.
And we will look for glimmers of hope, so at least we can turn up in London positive.
Come on.
And we're going to do it. We're going to do it. Where's our Fenton? Dig him out. Dig him up.
Dig up the Fenton.
Well, is he in the time capsule as well?
Well, they might as well put him in. Just looking at what's happened since the last... We put out two shows, 99 and 99.5, which we covered off.
Yeah, we kind of had a meltdown after Southampton, so kind of apologies. I mean, I'm sorry, but not that sorry, but...
Villa post the winter break. The only thing really that's happened is what I've just mentioned. I mean, let's just talk about some of the issues. The Green, a fast beloved spot of grass in North London, where Aston Villa fans have congregated in the last couple of years for the playoff finals, will now be fenced off by Brent Council. I think apparently the fence are going to be about 6 foot. And there's no surprise, because last year I remember going into that game like a couple of days before and it was like, will it be fenced off, won't it? And then at the last hour, they decided against that. And then Villa fans a minority smashed the Derby coach and just left it like a shithole. When they left, it was like the apocalypse had swept through. I remember going on the Brent Council website and there was just all the residents putting up videos of just litter and shit everywhere.
That was before we arrived, wasn't it?
And then after the, you know, we met Christian Purslow in a fan consultation group meeting after, like a week after the final, a week, 2 weeks. And he read out the letter that they got from Brent Council saying how people had urinated in gardens, had been fights with residents, et cetera, et cetera. So it's hard to, yeah. I mean, I, you know, always fight the good fight. I mean, like, for example, on the call to the Met Police, I said, have anybody like made any moves from the Met Police to actually inform coach companies and also Manchester City? Maybe it's not a great idea to drive a coach through, you know, a few thousand pissed up Villa fans, because that coach went the wrong way last time and the stewards directed them the wrong way. Mm. And obviously you don't excuse some mindless idiots for breaking in, the windows of the coach. But if you prevent something happening, it tends not to happen. At source.
Absolutely.
Right. So the Green's going to be fenced off. So where do you go? Well, Box Park, apparently the guaranteed tickets. I mentioned this to the Mets, that Box Park had been charging £10 and they almost like coughed out their tea or whatever they were drinking. They were quite surprised that Box Park were charging an entry fee there. But those guaranteed tickets to guarantee to get you in,
I don't know how much they're going to count for anything. I think there's going to be problems with that come Sunday.
I like the idea of the Box Park, that it was free, you get in and it's, you know, they're actually delivering something good. Mm-hmm. But now when you're putting on a tent, it's like, you cheeky fuckers.
Mm. I think they know that it's been discovered, don't they? Last year it was undiscovered and people thought, yeah, go to the green or the Green Man. Now everyone's like, hang on a sec, Box Park's right by the ground. There's really good food and there's facilities and it's good crack. It's a no-brainer.
We know we can make some money here. Yeah. Extra money, should I say. The thing is, when you close down the Green, because that's one thing I liked about the Green is, A, it cuts out, you know, these £6 beers and entrance fees to get into places and queues at bars and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, the Green Man was the place to be 2015, but then, you know, you were standing around for like 45 minutes just to get a bloody beer. The Green, suddenly it's a bit more democratic. You can go to Lidl, get a wheelbarrow, fill it with beers and take it up to the Green. By the way, it's actually illegal to drink around Wembley under Brent Council rules, but that's kind of something
impossible to enforce.
Something the police kind of turned a blind eye to on the actual day because, yeah, as Dan says, it's impossible to enforce. So where do you go now? I think people are making plans for another patch of grass somewhere about 12 minutes away.
There's a significant amount of pubs and bars around there, and I think that people will just congregate, won't they? The herd will move away.
Yeah, because the fan zone there, I mean, it's fair enough, but it's kind of empty because, you know, it's free to get in, but you're not allowed to take your own drinks in, and then suddenly, you're having to pay top dollar for, and it's a bit sanitised. But anyway, that's the situation there. Also, the Villa fans who have bought tickets, went to West Ham or got a reference somehow at Manchester City and then bought tickets, are starting to have them cancelled. Manchester City have contacted Villa and they've essentially cross-referencing names. And if they're popping up on the Villa database, then you're getting a call saying, sorry, but your ticket's cancelled.
The Stasi is alive and well.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I was doing that, I would use somebody that I knew's address outside of Birmingham, A.
And an alias.
B, I wouldn't be putting the fact that I'm at Manchester City on social media, which, I mean, if you're doing covert, do covert. Don't publicise it just to get some
likes. Especially
when
every, like, Twitter viral football page is going to retweet that sort of shit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah. But they're doing it for the likes and, you know, the acclaim, but it's very short-lived when you suddenly lost that money because it's been cancelled.
Yeah.
I think there was 50 known people, but I think even Villa have had issues, internal discipline, because staff have sold tickets on. So it is taken seriously that if it's not in your name and you pass it on, then they're at liberty to clamp down on that.
Mm. Yes, I've seen a couple of tickets that are circulating with not the original owner's name on it, shall we say.
Yeah, and there's £40 tickets in the top tier being sold for £300 as well.
Mm-hmm.
The usual shenanigans.
If anyone does want to make me an offer, I mean, I'm still...
Well, somebody was joking when I tweeted about Box Park's guaranteed tickets, the £10 ones being sold out now. Somebody was saying 2 Box Park tickets for £300.
Yeah.
Right, anyway, we'll get into the actual what's going to happen on the pitch in a second. First of all, 3 quick points since we didn't have any in the last episode. Number one, the Germans are very much into protesting in, let's say, a more unified and forceful manner than perhaps Premier League fans or English fans, who find it very hard to congregate and stand in union outside of, let's say, the Liverpool area. There was a protest about Monday night football, Eintracht Frankfurt in the Bundesliga. I think it's the one whole section behind the goal.
They'd lay a flag
out, didn't they? Stadium, when they played Union Berlin, basically left it empty with just a banner which said, I think it said Montag, and then just a cross through it.
Yeah, correct.
Which would never really happen in England, because...
Some flag policeman would come over and say, is that fire checked, that protest flag? Fuck off.
But no, not that. The fact that the supporters, you know, they would turn up, they wouldn't not turn up to, make a protest because, I've spent my money and I want to go.
Well, you've got a demonstration. Like you say, there's that unified approach, and you've got 2 teams there where it easily banded around like working class and whatnot. But it's that creep, isn't it, away from the genuine fan. And actually how that impacts upon the average supporter is quite significant, and good on them for doing it, you know.
Yeah, because I don't think Monday night has been an issue here. I mean, the only issues are when it's on a case-by-case basis when you realise you're playing Newcastle on a Monday night at 8 o'clock and the last train back from Newcastle back to Birmingham left before the game kicked off.
Yeah.
Kind of British way is to, right, let's find a way, I'll go on Megabus instead, rather than, you know, drawing a line in the sand and say, fuck this Monday night. Yeah,
why isn't this
TV?
3 o'clock on a Saturday with everything else?
Why isn't it, convenient for match-going fans? But that's why TV companies get away with what they do, because there's pretty much zero resistance.
Yeah, I saw the Bayern Munich fans had protested, hadn't they, at Chelsea as well the other night.
Yeah, they pretty much always do about the prices of the Champions League. Every time they come to play an English club, there's always some kind of banner there. Speaking of Germany, point number 2, I've done some research and behind the scenes talking with the Football Supporters Association, which I'm on the National Council of, about VAR and our approach to it. This Wolves group wanted to do a protest and basically get rid of VAR and turn your backs when there's a VAR decision. I'm kind of thinking, I think it's all about improving VAR and sorting it out. It's not like this binary Brexit, get rid or keep. It's like, well, it's here, so let's get, let's improve it. Because the principle of it is right. It's not really VAR that's the problem. It's the human error associated with it, and it's the application of it, which is a joke. But anyway, my German friend sent me some stats of what's been happening in Germany, and I think they've had it. Yeah, they've had it 3 years now. You know, they've had protests and, there's banners and there's a bit of discontent. I mean, in Holland, for example, I canvassed a friend who's like one of the heads of the biggest Ajax supporters members. He's on the council at the Football Supporters Europe setup. And he was saying it's getting better in Ajax and there doesn't seem to be much hostility to it. But in Germany, I think it's like split. You've got like the ultra groups who are against it, while there's another side that are kind of for it, but want to see an improvement. But the theme there from the stats, I mean, I won't bore you with all of them, but the length of the VAR process on average, when it came in on 2017/18, it took 57 seconds to make a decision on average. The following season, that went up to 61 seconds. And then this season so far, it's up to 79 seconds, which is one of the things... I mean, it's 2 fundamental things from my point of view, is to speed up the process and the transparency in stadium. So you're looking at the German experience and 3 seasons, it's taking more and more time.
It's 50% longer in 2 years.
Yeah, but the reason is because they're under pressure. You know, Germans, I don't know if we're stereotyping here, but Germans wanting to get something right, they're taking the extra time to make sure the decision is right.
Mm.
And that's all well and good, but you're breaking up the flow of the game, and that's what's pissing off the fans.
There's one thing, Germans, I can speak a little bit with German, some German family. That's the Villa postcode issue right in the background raising itself. They're incredibly good at bureaucracy. So they love the whole VAR process, and it's the wrong direction ultimately that they still have the same issues. I think even that this season there was a hilarious one where someone was sent off who was off the pitch and the ball hit them.
Yeah.
And so that's the worry that Europe wide, I think there's it's a bit more passive because they've had it for 2 or 3 seasons, Holland being the one you mentioned as well.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a worry if we normalise a shit system when maybe we'll be the ones to fix it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's got to be a push to improve it.
Mm.
Because if, you know, the authorities will think, typical supporters wanting VAR out or whatever. If you actually push for best practice, like, for example, there's a couple of things that the Germans are focusing on in a progressive manner, and that's talking about the transparency in the stadia.
Yeah.
But also they're mulling over the idea of having like NFL-style mic'd-up referees, so the referee actually explains what's happening over the tannoy. And I think the Premier League, for example, are fearful for that for some reason.
I think it's because of we don't want to take too long on VAR, I suppose, but I think it's the you've got this stubbornness from the head of the referees, which is it's Riley, isn't it, still? And I think that what you've got is that at the moment there's been a number of examples where the referee hasn't been clear on why the decision was arrived at.
Exactly.
And I think that they're until they square off who's the final decision maker, and a lot of this relates to, I think, getting a referee in front of a pitch side screen quickly. I don't know why that's such a massive leap, because it doesn't then absolve the referee of responsibility to stand behind a decision he could likely disagree with or not understand.
Yeah, anyway, it should just be focused on improving, from a supporter point of view, improving the transparency and in-stadia communication, but it's not just a UK problem.
No.
But anyway, let's move on to the third and final European point, and that's coronavirus seems to be, in Europe it's really kicked off in Italy. We've already seen the Sampdoria and Roma game postponed, and now we're in a situation where there's 5 Serie A games being played behind closed doors this forthcoming weekend. You know, big games, we're talking Juventus at home to Inter Milan. All because of the virus, also matches at AC Milan as well. Parma, Udinese. And there are actually listings here. Serie A fixtures to be played behind closed doors and Serie A fixtures to be played with fans, as if it's some kind of novelty to have fans. And maybe it will be for the rest of the season.
Mm. I mean, there's no plans in the UK.
Do you get your money back? Hold on one sec. Do you get your money back for your season ticket? Or is there a technicality?
Ooh, it's force majeure, isn't it?
Read the small print about viruses.
It's an act of God.
Maybe it is. Sorry, you were saying, Dan.
Well, it's just, in a Villa context, now I haven't really thought about it until this moment, really, that the government said that they've got no plans in the UK, that is, to stop, even in the event of widespread outbreak, to stop large congregations of people, because I think the inevitability thing, you know, if it's going to happen, it's happened. But they have said that they would pretty much reduce or stop all public transport.
Yeah.
So what we could easily see in the UK is, because obviously we're a small island, and if it plays out the way that the worst case, then it's inevitable that you might have the game open, you can attend it, but not be able to get there.
Yeah, in this meeting with the police over the cup final, I joked that instead of giving away those cheap little plastic flags, they should give away claret and blue face masks.
Like it.
Which you can wave around as well, if you haven't got the virus.
It'll be interesting to see over the next couple of weeks, because, of course, England play Italy, don't they, at Wembley at the end of March.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe not.
Maybe Sunday will be the largest single mass quarantining, that someone will cough in about the 5th minute and we'll all be welded into Wembley Stadium.
For 14 days.
Staring across at the Man City section going, he looks awfully like a Villa fan.
Staring at the scoreboard, 8-0.
Staring at the red seats in the Man City end. They had the right idea, stay at home. They're all in Madrid in quarantine in the sunshine.
We jest, but it is obviously a serious issue now with the stock market dropping. People now, companies essentially saying no travel, work from home and all that kind of stuff.
Well, there's even long-term forecasts about things like, you know, toy availability and clothing availability because so much is manufactured in the Far East.
Yeah, I think Apple will run out of products to punt out. Mm. Samsung's Korean, isn't it? And obviously South Korea have been hit by it. But yeah, it's going to have an impact for sure. Right, before we crack on, just want to give a big shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons for keeping the show alive. And if you do sign up, you get access to over 70 extra shows now.
Hang on, we're doing over 70s show now. What?
For the old OAPs where we go back in time to the when we were great. But no, sorry, 70 episodes, and we're putting it, we'll no doubt have some post-Wembley reflections too. So yeah, please do go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the Patreon option to sign up there and support the show. Thank you very much. We now get people who send in, once they sign up as a patron, they'll send me a message with instructions on how to pronounce their name, which
wouldn't be like you to butcher someone's name, would it?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, you know,
Donald Trump did with Sachin Tendulkar and Brett Kohli this week. Oh my word!
Does he think I'm dyslexic with names or something? I mean, I may have mentioned that in the past.
Yeah, Chris, have some bloody respect. It's a protected characteristic, you fucking.
He didn't. Unfortunately, he didn't send me instructions how to pronounce his Christian name. It was just his surname.
Oh.
I think it's Eric. And he says, just Eric. Info, for my surname, it is month of course, said with the same rhyme and beat as intercourse in English.
Love it.
Month of course.
It's kind of similar to mine, Rogers. It's different, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, Rogers.
Mm. He says, that is the best tip and usually gets a laugh. Yeah, not as much as Rogers, though.
No. That's why I'm here. It's good to be back, people.
Also, apologies to the creator of the Rasmussen diagram, which we mentioned in the last show, which is the chart that our friend sends in, which plots Villa's survival fate and whether we're on progress or not. Unfortunately, and this is a bit like, this is like sentencing somebody to the death penalty, and then after it happens, realizing you've made a mistake and you can't really go back on it.
No.
I referred to Christopher Rye Rasmussen as Norwegian, and I think I've referred to him as Norwegian every time we've mentioned him, but apparently he's Danish, so apologies. I don't know what I can do to make it up to you. That's all I can say.
Thanks for a Corey.
Right, let's get on to the business at hand. It's Villa versus City.
Yes.
Wembley.
Yes.
League Cup.
Yes.
Come on.
Oh, I've just scrolled onto the page with our win record against Manchester City.
No, don't look at that. Don't look at that. Put your sunglasses on. Okay. Put your, I don't know, eye patch on, whatever.
It's as red as the proper team from Manchester.
Very good.
You get an L for a loss and it's in red. So,
holy shoot.
Just to explain that. Ben Redding has been on the show previously, will be on the show again, sent me a message saying that a certain betting company had Villa out at 20-1 to win this game. To give you some context, they were 4-1 when they beat Manchester United, the proper team in Manchester, in 1994. But we did have a team then that had finished second in the league to United the season before, and actually they focused on the cup that season, so that's why they dropped down. I think it was 10th that they finished, but we had a team to beat them, and obviously Schmeichel was suspended for United. I was confident that day, 100%. It was weird. I never felt so confident for a Villa game that we had their number. I think it was mainly the Schmeichel situation and the fact that if we had turned up, we had the players to beat anybody in England. This time, bit different.
Yeah, who is our Graham Fenton? Is it
Don't groan yet. Save that to the end.
That's what she said.
Let's look on the bright side. Let's look at cup pedigree.
Yes.
Aston Villa, when they get to a cup final, chances are they'll win it.
They're going to win it.
League Cup, they've won 5. They've runners up 3 times. FA Cup, they've won it 7 times. Runners up 4 times.
Yes, but God was young the last time we won the FA Cup.
But the majority... Majority of the time, Villa are a big team. When they turn up at Wembley, it's a cup final. They tend to win it if you go back in history.
That's true.
So there's pedigree. Wembley experience. I mean, Manchester Evening News had put out a story that it was Manchester City's second home. I mean, you can't really argue with that. How many times have they been? 10 in the last 7 years? I can't remember.
It's 17 since the Sheikh arrived.
Ridiculous.
You count like semi-finals and stuff.
And what did they say? It was Villa's first trip for...
ever.
10 years? Ever, I think. They were implying.
Villa did not exist before 2010, apparently.
Well, no, they didn't even count the last 5 years. We've been there five... This would be our fifth trip in the last 5 years. They were making out as our first trip for a very long time.
I think Chris was the only person not to have seen us win there for...
Oh, yeah, forgot about that record.
Only just broken Wembley, his...
Shocking. Yeah, only just broken it. Mm. I think that plays into... you've got a team where, let's say, the spine of it... I mean, unfortunately, McGinn's not going to be there.
I'd play him.
One put him on the bench.
But yeah, I'd play him.
Supposedly useless in the camp. I mean,
manager Mr. Michael, do you want to see his updated fitness report on McGinn? McGinn, I've seen you've put him in the squad. Nah, don't worry about that. He's playing.
It's a psychological thing. That's all it is. You don't even have to use him. Just put him on the bench. Lift everyone's spirits.
It's just to make Pep Guardiola go, "Oh shit, McGinn's fit." They've been lying to us all that time.
Yeah, I mean, we...
Why has he got crutches?
Come on, John, you only need to get through 10 minutes.
But seriously, we played there last year. A lot of the members of this team would play there last year, so it's not as if they were going to freeze. But we're not going to be fazed. Grealish has played there five times. He is our main hope in this game. I mean, the good thing about playing Manchester City, they don't look at him and go, "Oh, we've got to stop Grealish, we've got to stop Grealish." They play against, you know, they played Madrid and beat Madrid before this game. And, you know, they're playing a team where you've got, there's a good bunch of, you've got Modric, you've got Bale coming on, you've got Benzema, you've got the mighty Ramos who got sent off for the 26th time. That's incredible.
You've got Isco, what a player, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, they're playing teams that all the time with handfuls of top stars. So, they look at Grealish and they may overlook him. But if Grealish, I mean, Grealish is going to have his best game we've probably seen in a Villa shirt to win this game.
Oh, it's 11 against, one, isn't it?
It's his fifth time, so he's not going to be fazed by it. And I think he's a bit disappointed by his performance last year in the playoff final. So he'll be looking to impress. But yeah, also, there is that thing where Villa have... I mean, we've been hammered 4-0 many times against them. When you just look down this list, there's a 5-0 in there as well. But we seem to beat them when we least expect it. Mm. I mean... Mm. Remy Gard, that was the year that we went down, was it 17 points?
Yeah.
Something horrific like that. I've tried to erase it from my memory.
Remy Gard managed to get a 0-0 draw against Manchester City at Villa Park.
I classed that a 0-0 win under that with that team. Yeah.
Clean sheet hell? Against anyone, let alone Man City.
How on earth did we manage that?
I mean, people slag off Remy Gard, but I mean, a man who can get Villa a clean sheet against Manchester City. I'm trying to think the last time that happened. It was
that's a result.
I think it was when Darren Bent scored under Gerard Houllier when we beat them 1-0.
Oh, that was his debut.
Yeah,
2011.
Oh,
that
my
was the last.
God,
that was the only time till this day, apart from the Remy Gard 0-0. We weren't really favourites to win that, but we were capable of beating Manchester City in those days. I mean, we still had, you know, the players, even though we were heading south in terms of our ambition as a club. But then that League Cup game, Lambert managed to beat them a couple of times.
I tell you what, there's some results here. That don't they get referred to like a dubious results panel? Isn't there should be some serious investigation?
I mean, I gave up on that League Cup.
Charles and Zogbia won.
Yes.
And what was he even doing on the field?
Oh,
We were playing in the lime kit. Stephen Ireland was playing.
He scored the winner, didn't he?
God.
Yeah, he Lambert rested a couple of players. He played some alternate players. I was living in Brighton. And I couldn't be asked to go midweek to Manchester for that.
I remember this.
Even though it was one you can get tickets for because nobody gives a shit about the League Cup.
The lime
and I went
kit.
To the cinema, and I remember coming out of the cinema and almost just checking the score just to see how many we'd been pummeled by. And I was like, fuck, you know.
People running out of pubs with newspapers.
Hey, boss, see this? Read all about it.
Fell or four, Manchester City 2.
Women and children screaming.
So that was a miracle result. And then the result I remember from 2013 is because I was so fucked off with Villa at the time. And I looked at the odds and there were pretty good odds.
Some things never change.
Yeah, and I put 60 quid on Manchester City to win. And somehow Andy Vyman decided today is my day.
Just another one of those days where Joe Hart went walkabout.
That's such an iconic photo in front of the whole team. It was like he was celebrating just to you.
Yeah, if I didn't lose that money, I'd probably have that print on my living room wall in a big gold frame, but I
wasn't
can't.
Wasn't that a rare day where Bakuna whipped a free kick in? Wasn't it him who scored a worldie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He
but of course, now
he
just spends his time having punch-ups at Cardiff on the field.
Champions League player that year.
So what we're saying is what the conclusion of this is,
we can do it.
We should pick our worst team.
We can beat them when sometimes we don't even think we've got a chance, and we made changes as well in the Manchester League Cup game. So Smith's talking about some of the players have talked themselves out of playing in the final. So we might turn up there, look at that squad and go, well, yeah, we're going to get fucked here.
Mm.
But some people might have a point to prove and miracles do happen. And Manchester City players may have been masturbating all every night since their win in Madrid, celebrating that. So they might not have any spunk left in them, so to speak.
Enjoying their double denim travel outfits.
Exactly. Right, let's get into, we're goofing around here looking at extravagance stats, but how do you approach this game as a Villa boss? I mean, I think you've got to sit down and think, how are we going to beat these fuckers and try to come up with a plan, as Ron Atkinson did back in 94. Mm. So how do you go and set out
aggressive
to try to win this game?
Aggressive as possible. Get out of
way.
Get in their face. Go and try and get an early knockout blow.
What, in the tunnel?
Take them out.
Explain what do you mean by aggressive?
Yeah.
I think if you get the ball, you'd be proactive. You don't try and play out from the back. You try and get the ball in their third as quickly as you can. I'm not talking about route one. I'm talking about Liverpool style, direct. You look at all the teams that have beaten them this season, Man United, Wolves twice, Norwich. They all turned Man City round, played them on the break. I mean, admittedly, Wolves have got the devastating pace of Traore, who just destroyed them.
We've got the devastating pace of Trezeguet.
Yeah, but if you put the ball in behind their fullbacks and stretch them, we just have to be brave. You know, if we're going to get the ball into the likes of Samatta or Davis or whoever's going to lead the line, the likes of Grealish, we need, whether it's going to be Hourihan or Luiz or Trezeguet, El Ghazi, whoever's going to be the forward line or the wingbacks, people are going to need to bomb on, because I think that the back City are there for the taking. If you sit back, you're just asking to be ripped to pieces.
Mm. That was our mistake at Villa Park with Drinkwater on this
debut.
Yeah,
we were passive, weren't we?
We were so deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're going to pick you apart anyway. And I think in the first 5 or 10 minutes, if the ball's there to be won, take the ball and take a fucking lot of the man as well. And make sure when they go in at half-time, they are black and blue and they know they're in a game. Smash one of them in the first 10 minutes if you have to. If someone has to take a yellow card, so be it. But let them know that this time round, we're not going to sit back and be passive. Because I think, actually, if a Villa player smashes one of them, the whole crowd and that Villa end will explode into life.
I would make a point before the game. If I would play some mind games. I would say, we're going to go and get stuck in here.
Mm.
Make out that they may lose a few players or get kicked a bit.
Just come out and publicly say, Man City, when they come off that field, they will know they've been in a game. Because then the fans know straight away they're going to get stuck in.
In the first 20 minutes, make them think, "Oh, I don't actually fancy this because I want to play in Europe. I want to win the Champions League."
So what you're suggesting is the first 15 minutes we give Neil Taylor a free roaming tackling role.
No, actually, what we're going to do is we're going to like de-ice Alan Hutton out of the cryogenic freezer and let him go all Saido Berahino on them.
Yes, that could be done.
Well, I'm looking at what we've got in terms of pace and some, you know, directness to actually, if we get it up there a bit more direct and put them under, who have we got? I mean, I think we've got a press.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Liverpool had success. I mean, Liverpool played on the counter against them in their games where they've had success, but also they pressed fast up front and we need to get that press back.
Yeah, our early season success was based on that, wasn't it? Well, we didn't have a lot of points, but our competitive edge that seems to have completely dissipated.
The Champions League game at Madrid, Madrid's opener, I mean, they got beat 2-1, but their opener came from Manchester City's mistake in playing. I mean, I joked to the person I was watching it with, this is like watching Villa, because they were trying to play it out the back, fucked it up, Madrid pounced on it, and, you know, in it went. So they aren't, you know, they're not the finished article by any means. If you can press them and force them in, and if Samatta can get about, then, but I mean, Grealish, if he's got the ball, somebody needs to be with him. He's got to have options. He can't just be running with four, you know, into traffic every time. We've got to support Grealish to actually help utilize what he can do.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So that said, Smith talked about players playing them way out of the final. I mean, Gilbert said he had a shit performance, but I mean, he's somebody who actually with pace that we haven't really seen. I mean, we saw him really bomb on at times early on in the season, but nobody actually picks him up. But yeah. I think there's a ball there to be had that Manchester City would have forgotten about, that he can just bomb on.
Yeah.
But will he be on the pitch?
I don't know, because I mean, El Mohamedy obviously provided the ball that got Villa there. I think his sort of swinging ball down the line could be an option. Tactically, that might be the way to turn him around. Just hit it into the channels and let Samatta chase it. I think if we play well on the day, or if we're going to be successful, he's going to have to work so hard. Because potentially he could get very isolated.
Smith might think, well, Elmo's probably a safer bet defensively, like he was thinking at the start of the season.
Yeah.
When he didn't rush those guys in. Yeah. But, you know, one hand, we're talking about having a go attacking them with everything we've got to try to, you know, knock them down, if you want to use boxing terms, because we've been picked, you know, sitting back, trying to catch them. We've been, you know, they've scored 9 goals against us. So we know we can't hold out that way, playing that cautious game. So we might as well throw the kitchen sink at them if we can do in the opening exchanges. Mm-hmm. But you're going to need target on the pitch, surely. And is Gilbert the best option if you play 3 at the back? Will he play the 3 centre-backs, do you think? Or will he revert? Because he obviously, in-game, switched to a conventional 4-4-2. Well, sorry, 4 at the back.
I think it's a deceptively important selection, actually, because Man City exploited that space at Villa Park and put the game to bed in a very short space of time, really. Get it wrong, and I think that you'll either have to make a change quickly, which isn't a Smith thing to do, or suffer the consequences. Having said that, I do think a lot depends on the style that we're going to adopt on the day, because you can pick either. But if you're too deep and you're trying to play a containment game, I think you're asking for trouble against Man City. I think you've actually got to get in the midfield and exploit, you know, using the example of Gilbert. We know, you know, we saw him pre-season and early doors in his Villa career, that he's got the ability to get beyond, down the flank and deliver a cross of a sort. Target's proven that he's got a ball in him as well. But there's you're not going to hurt teams if you're in your own third.
Yeah. There's that temptation to go 4 at the back and put an extra man in midfield, isn't there?
I think so, and that might be a bit of pride swallowing, you know, as well, that I don't think Smith's been very fortunate in getting that pairing settled either. And for me, I think you've got to try.
What pairing?
Well, he's always he's seeing a mistake, isn't he? So, you know, you get Engels back in the team and then you're forced to drop him again because of the horrendous error that he makes. And I think that if you're going to switch back to a pair, I don't think the pair's necessarily obvious, but I don't think the 3 works.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if you get the Engels Mings at the start of the season.
Exactly. It says to me there's something in that.
You could go with that and just say that's, a, you know, probably as good as it gets, and then focus on hurting him at the other end.
I just worry when I see the lack of awareness and the naivety between Konsa and House at the weekend for the Southampton goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just don't know whether... I think Engels' mistake was a dreadful error. It wasn't
positional, was it? It was one of those things that happens and it can happen to anyone.
Shouldn't happen at, you know, at the level that Engels is playing at and the standard he should be. But for me, it was the... I saw that, you watch that Southampton goal back, you think, yeah, that was a bit of a Clark and Baker moment for me.
You look at House, you look at Konsa, you're thinking, well, they're kind of doing that regularly.
Mm-hmm.
They're not marking the runners, they're not picking up men. And so that is, I'm thinking, well, I'd probably go with Engels and Mings and then use that extra man in midfield somehow.
I would. I think the huge loss, the huge gaping hole in the midfield is obviously McGinn. That, you know, you then, as we were trying to do in the early middle part of the season, was to compliment a player like him. I the Nakamba Luiz thing is, either you start to think, oh yeah, that looks quite interesting, or it's an absolute shitstorm for us.
You know, you need weapons against Manchester City, because you're not going to get many chances. You're not going to get many chances, so you need people who, and McGinn is one of our, let's say, a proper finisher. If he gets a chance,
he can score
wonder goals. Trezeguet, I don't think, is that man.
No.
El Ghazi, he's a 50-50 type player. You've only got like your Grealish. I think Samatta's a finisher, but obviously unproven in a Villa shirt.
Mm.
So we are. I mean, Hourihane, we know he can score, but will he be on the pitch? And is he going to be up to doing the work of actually trying to stop Manchester City?
I mean, he had a mare, didn't he, at Villa Park?
He did. He did.
Yeah.
You did. And that's why I think the style's so important, that if you put a Hourihane into the mix there, you've got to be playing as far up the pitch as possible to take advantage of the fact that he's got a finish in him or the set pieces. You know, it's absolutely no point doing what we saw at Villa Park, where you're inviting people to run past him. He's too light.
Yeah, Drinkwater's obviously not playing because of being cup tied. Mm. So, I mean, how do you factor in the extra midfield? I mean, somebody even said put Konsa in there, shielding two centre-backs.
I personally would actually go very similar to how Ron Atkinson played it in 94. I would go with probably more like a back four, but essentially it's kind of the back three we currently play, and you almost have to say Samatta and Jack, go and hurt them, one midfielder go, and then you are going to have to sacrifice Trezeguet or El Ghazi and play the extra man in the middle of the park, and you're going to probably play
Lansbury.
Well, you're going to play Hourihane.
Lansbury is
Hourihane,
the phantom.
Marvellous and Louise.
You have been chosen, Henry Lansbury. You will be the Graham Fenton of this League Cup final.
Yeah, and essentially you give your wing
backs
license.
Isn't convinced on that, I don't think, Dave.
He's not. He's ignoring me, isn't
not
he?
Not even.
Yeah. I was in midpoint. I was in full flow then.
Oh, sorry.
I was in the middle of my tactical masterclass. You've ruined it now.
Sorry, carry on with the masterclass.
Sorry, take us back to 1994.
We're gonna get a comedian on the bus. No, essentially, if you give your fullbacks license to get up the field, which they can do, and bomb on a bit, and you flood the midfield.
Mm.
So it's almost, it becomes like a 3-5-2, but with one of your five in the middle sits, and one of them's like a diamond. So Jack's at the top of that, and then probably Nakamba's at the bottom. So you always have, at any one time, at least five men behind the ball. But you need pace, a bit of bravery, and you're going to need two or three players with a fucking engine on them, because your two fullbacks are going to have to bomb on. Otherwise, Grealish and Samatta are going to get very isolated very quickly.
Because, I mean, you could go the old 4...
It's essentially a 4-5-1, but...
Yeah, I was about to say that. Mm-hmm. And you give Grealish the free roll up front to try to get as close to Samatta as he can.
Yeah, yeah. That was going to be, I suppose, my view, really. Because I think, just to round off, my I don't even know what you would call it, my one hope is that I'm not massively impressed with them at the back. And I think it's a missed opportunity if we don't test them.
You know,
if we go there in ultra negative or containment mode, I don't think necessarily we could get embarrassed, but I don't think we stand a prayer in seeing out 90 minutes and trying to nick one. I don't think you beat Man City like that. I think you try and get at them in the first 30 minutes and unsettle their style of play. Try and score, but give them something to think about. In recent weeks, we haven't done that for teams. Like the Southampton game was case in point.
Yeah.
Very different opposition. If you give teams nothing to think about, they'll just come in waves at you.
Because look at how we performed against Liverpool at Villa Park. Look how we performed large swab of the game against Spurs.
Arsenal. You know, Spurs
how we
on
took
the first
on
day
Arsenal.
Of the
yeah, the first, mm. well, both Spurs games, I mean, I suppose. So that's what gives you hope. If we can hit those levels, then we can stay in the game. Then it's a matter of cutting out stupid mistakes, which we've been prone to the whole fucking season. So if those two factors click in, then we've actually got a game that we can actually be at Wembley and watch and think, well, at least, you know, at least we're here competing.
Exactly, I was about to say, be competitive and keep yourself in with a chance that, you know, even if you do go a goal behind, if your game plan is sound and if that the way, you know, and you give yourself those opportunities. The thing that came to mind as you were talking, particularly about the Spurs game, was that was a game we absolutely had the chances or were in the right positions to create a chance where we could have won the football match. And that would be my, I don't know how I'd feel if I walked away from Wembley thinking, well, hang on, you know, if Trezeguet had squared to Luiz, that sort of type of miss that we saw against Spurs in front of the whole 10, that you think, you know, a cup final is a beautiful thing in the sense that it's 90 minutes, hopefully, and that you can, but, you know, you might as well absolutely kitchen sink it, especially if you can get into the early middle part of the second half. It's shit or bust, isn't it?
Yeah, they've got to compete, which they didn't do against Southampton. And that's, you know, going back to 94, they were flaking around in the league up to that game because all the players were like, you know, really focused on that final because, you know, the League Cup then had a bit more of a, you know, shine to it. I was just thinking, I was going back to, we're talking about players with, you know, finishing touches that can actually hurt them. I would say Luiz and his shot. If you've got Samatta up front, if you've got Grealish roaming around him in a kind of a free role, and if Grealish does go out to the left, if Luiz can fill in the gap behind, and, you know, if the ball's pulled back and he's around the edge of the box, then there's the scope there for one of his exercits.
It's fair to say that a few of our, especially the central midfield options, are great if we've got the ball, but the doubts about Luiz, Hourihane, sometimes Nakamba has been without the ball, and let's be pretty frank, 99 times out of 100, Man City are going to have more on the ball. I think this season they've only surrendered possession once in a game, and that was at Molineux. Wolves had 62% of the ball.
This is crazy.
Every other team that's beaten them has soaked up and hit them. Wolves was like a bit of a freak day. I don't know if Man City were bad that day, Wolves were great, or a bit of both. But generally, Man City, even when they play badly, they will monopolise possession. So you've got to be really efficient with when you get the ball. And when you get the chance, you're going to have to take it. And you have to be efficient with how you know where Villa choose to press. You know, this Smith thing of earlier in the year of, oh, we want to get on a high press, that's fine, but you have to pick your moment. Otherwise, you're going to be knackered by half time if you're trying to press them, you know, in their own fullback positions. You've got to know, okay, now we can go.
We've got to be purposeful.
Full well, that if they get past your press, especially if they get past Villa's press with the likes of Luiz, Nakamba, Hourihane, who are not good on the half turn, once they're past you, they're gone.
That's what we saw at Villa Park, wasn't it?
Once they got, and because we played so deep at Villa Park, we try and play our way out, we'd get caught in and around the box, and you're just gifting them. And when you've got players like De Bruyne and Luiz, they can just pick a pass. You know, City kept Aguero and Sterling on the bench at the Bernabeu. You would think Sterling would play. He might come in for a De Bruyne, I don't know.
When I saw that, I thought Aguero's starting in the final and Sterling is too. Yeah. They're just going to go for a swift annihilation, aren't they?
Execution,
exactly.
So be it. But you know what? Sterling's one of those players I said right at the top of the show. Get into him early.
Yeah.
Go through the back of him and be smart. You know, Villa did it a few times recently. They started doing it in the Leicester Cup game, in the second semi-final especially. If you have to foul them in the centre circle.
Yeah, it started to wind them up, didn't it, a little bit? Yeah.
Start to wind them up, break the game up. Villa can't let it be an open game. If it's an open game and it's moving at pace, it's not going to suit us. It's because the more we have to chase the ball, we're going to get knackered. That's when the mistakes happen. If we can just niggle at them, you know, if you've after sort of 35, 40 minutes, if you've got Guardiola in the ear of the fourth official and the referee losing his marbles, you know you've done something right. That's what I want to see. I want to see Guardiola losing his shit.
Also, I'd be watching back, obviously, the league games that City lost, but also that semi-final at the Etihad, Manchester United, because Manchester United could have won that. They were just lacking the player. Obviously, the sending off didn't help them. But that was a frustrated City team.
It's staggering, really, that such a poor Man United team, of all the teams they've messed up against and they've failed to beat Villa, yet they've been to the Etihad twice and won.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to great Man City fans enormously. In a season when Man U were at probably their lowest, certainly in my lifetime, and yet they still haven't beaten them this season.
But it's also hope and food for thought, because that was another, you know, another example of where we were highly competitive at Old Trafford. but also showing you that Manchester City do have off days. And, you know, you look at their, they've been beaten six times in the league. They've lost 22% of their games in the Premier League this season.
And they can overplay.
That's one in five. So they're not invincible.
Nope. It's the thing of if they overplay, and I think Villa have to get it into their head. And I know it's the Smith way that, oh, we want to play a certain way. We want to distribute. We want to play out from the back. You've got to get that ball in the box.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've got to stretch them. There's a bit of like Sunday league about it. Hit it, run, get into the corners and just play territory to a certain extent. Turn them round and go, right, we can play from here.
That's the Graham Taylor approach.
Yeah, you know, he used to call it, let's set up base camp. Let's get it in the corners and just stretch the pitch lengthwise, but don't just drop and give them 60, 70, 80 yards of just space to just pop it around in, turn them round, face their own goal and go, right, now we'll start from here. Now we can press them. Now they're in their own half.
Dean Smith obviously studies the cult of Pep, but what he's got at the moment is just Primark Pep. He's not going to beat the real deal doing the same thing, because we're a Primark version of playing it out the back, as we've seen.
You don't beat Man City at their own game. No one
exactly.
does. No one
but,
does.
As we've seen, they are very, very beatable.
They would definitely
be beatable if we had that man Scott Hogan in our team, who is pulling up trees. Now he's at our arch rivals. I think it's time we have a 100th century episode installment of the Scott Hogan touch count meter. So you were stripped of your title. The governing body had to strip Dan Rogers of his title.
I just requested to be stripped.
he is the linear. He's the man who beat the man who beat the man, as Tyson Fury likes to say. Well, recently Max Stokes beat Chris Budd, so Max Stokes is kind of technically the champion, but anyway, who gives a shit? The context is a lot has happened in the universe of Scott Hogan. He has gone to the Blues. Mm-hmm. We've discussed this in a previous show. Mm-hmm. And he's suddenly turned into, he's up there with Aguero, probably. He's the championship's Aguero all of a sudden. Banging it. Four goals in five games. I mean, the man's on fire.
He scored on his debut.
Yeah. Hmm. You can't stop him. So we can focus back on Scott Hogan. Sorry, if you haven't listened to the show, when we've had a Scott Hogan touch count meter, quickly the rules, what there is of them. It's the best of three. First to win two rounds. Each round, the two competitors have two rounds each to guess how many touches either Scott Hogan or whatever other player we are talking about had. They will get the time that they played and, you know, the context of the game. If after two guesses they don't get it, then there's a third round, which there may be a clue there to help them out if both competitors are way off the mark. But anyway, first to two. Dan Rogers has pulled off some miracle wins when he's been down, but then pulled it back out of nowhere. Just ask Ben Redding about that.
Wherever he is. Sobbing.
Still crying about it. Right, let's get into the first round of the first game. Just a bit of context, Scott Hogan. Obviously, he was a bit part sub at Stoke until the Blues swept in. I think he actually got subbed off the only game he did start at Millwall at half-time. In the wilderness until mid-December onwards, and then Blues thought, this is exactly what we need to fire up our season. So off he went to the Blues, and he now plays in a 4-4-2 with Lukas Jukovic. And it's doing pretty well. Well, they've had some pretty good results since Hogan's been in the team. Let's go more recent backwards. Played Sheffield Wednesday, drew 3-3 against a team where Barry Bannon scored against them. He was very happy to score against the Blues. I think, did he say something on social media, or was it an interview?
Didn't he say he can basically retire now?
Yeah.
Strange chap.
The claret and blue blood still courses through his veins, apparently.
He's Scottish.
Anyway, who's going first?
Dan's back. I'll let him put his marker down.
Right, so he played the full game. Goal and an assist.
Two shots
on target. That's all I'm saying. And obviously his goal was...
So we had four touches then.
A volley in injury time.
To great goal, to be fair.
Make it 3-3. Yeah, it is actually. It's just exactly what we need. How many touches?
12.
From the Rogers, Chris Budd.
20.
Second round.
14
from the Rogers. Chris Budd surfing the internet quickly.
Yeah.
Can't find it.
Swiping away.
I'm saying play the full 90s. I'm going to be generous. I'm going to say 22.
22. Nobody's got it yet. We're going to a third and final round. The only clue I'll give you is it's less than 50.
Right.
Thanks for your generosity, then. Okay. So I reckon I'm on the low side. I'm going to throw in
some statistic for you. It's I don't know if this helps you or not. His pass completion was 91.7.
One pass, then he just had loads of shots.
91.7.
28.
Final go from the Rogers. Now we're going to Mr. Budd.
30.
Ooh, trying to fence it in. First round goes to Mr. Budd.
No. Come on, back in the game.
24 touches.
What on earth is he doing, this Scott Hogan guy?
This is like he's at least doubling.
This is ruining the game. This is far too many touches.
Was he doing kick-ups before the game or something? I feel concerned that the boundaries of
just another statistic that I picked up.
This is kind of a hollow victory, to be honest.
While I was compiling these stats, I also picked up that Gary Gardner had, and I think it's a shame that I'm doing it in reverse, but we're going to see how Gary Gardner has actually got better but he's still bad. 47 touches from Gary Gardner playing centre mid, 72.7% completion, pass completion, which isn't great, put it that way.
But yeah, we'll see. Don't play passing football, do they?
I'll give you an update on his completion rates as we go into the next game. So previously they played Brentford. 1-1 draw. Now, there's a little bit of information I want to slide in here on the sly. Uh-huh. Dean Smith, bit of criticism of Dean Smith floating around, obviously because of our precarious situation. Bit of a statistic for you. Yeah. Brentford, before Dean Smith came along, finished 5th, got in the playoffs. Dean Smith comes along 8th, 9th, 12th, whatever, 10th, whatever. Brentford now back in 5th in the playoff spots. Should we read anything into this? Should we read anything into this? Just putting it out there. Make of it what you will. Anyway, Scott Hogan, Chris Gophers, 1-0 up, played 74 minutes before being pulled off. How many touches in 74 minutes? It's getting plenty of game time.
19.
19 from the Bird.
70 minutes. I'm going to go 16.
16 from Mr. Rogers.
Who goes into playing again?
Brentford.
Away or home?
At home.
Oh, okay. What did I say first? 19. 21. I'll be generous.
I think this is the only game he hasn't scored in. Sorry, what was that?
21.
What did I say first, Gar?
16.
I'm going to go 19.
You can't have that. Mr. Budd already has
18.
That. 18 from the Rogers. We go into a final round. As I said, he didn't score in the game. I'm going to say, again, another useless clue. It was lower than 30.
22.
22 from the Budd.
I think I'm being really generous here.
Can Dan Rogers put this one away?
27.
Oof, 27. Obviously read into my clue a bit too much, maybe, but doesn't matter because he still won. It was 17. Either side.
Ooh, that was
16
a close one for
and
once.
18. He was peppering the target.
We were, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's more like the Scott Hogan we've come to know and love.
One all. We go into the decider. On that little sidetrack, Gary Gardner, 57 touches, 60% completion rate.
That is terrible. Awful.
That's stinking the place out.
So just to give listeners a bit of context, normally Villa players around, even if they're having a shocker, you're around low 80s, aren't you?
Even Isaiah Osborne sat somewhere there going, fucking. And it's also proof you can't play football with hooves.
And it's truth. If your game's not going very well, don't get your brother Craig to coach you.
Oh, crikey.
Player coach Craig Gardner.
There's three games. Shall I bunch these together?
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Do it.
So here's what we've got. We have got full 90 minutes against Barnsley. Mm-hmm. He had 3 shots, 2 on target, and a goal. Now, in that game against Barnsley, Gary Gardner, I'll get this out of the way now, 49 touches. Pass completion, 48.6%.
Wow.
Incredible.
And to think there were people at Villa who were...
He's the next Steven Gerrard.
He's absolute muck.
We'll look forward to playing against him next year then.
Jesus.
How can you have 48.6% pass completion and you're like meant to be their main man midfielder or one of them?
And one in less than one in two passes, he found a blue shirt.
Right. So Hogan played the whole game against Barnsley, 3 shots, 2 on target and a goal. Against Bristol City, 2 shots on target and a goal. And that was another 90 minutes, I think. And against Nottingham Forest, where they won, I think it was 2-1, also scored in that. 83 minutes. I can hear tapping a keyboard, Stan Rogers.
Do you know what? It's not. It's me. It's my Bic pen. I'm actually writing it down. I'm taking this serious on my return.
83 minutes. So he's pretty much, I think he's played every game, every minute, apart from 7 minutes. So it's, 180 plus 80. So 263 minutes of football from Mr. Scott Hogan. How many touches, Dan Rogers going first in 3 games?
The cumulative total, I think. Yeah. I think.
3 games. And he scored 3 goals.
I'm going to go with 60.
60 from Mr. Dan Rogers. Chris Bird, brain just going into overdrive now.
78.
78. Mm. Chris sees the new revamped Hogan.
70.
Oh, it scares Rogers into going higher.
I have no fear. Chris should be fearful.
I'm not the Villa here, Dan. I've got nothing to lose.
I know
it's not my crown.
Where are you going for, Chris?
What did I say? 78.
69.
Motherfucker.
Right, we're going into a third round. It's higher than 40, lower than 80.
Thanks. Well, okay. That's Gary Gardner's completion.
Okay. 65.
65 from Dan Rogers. Better check my maths, actually. You've had 78 and 69, Chris.
Mm-hmm. And my final guess is 60.
I've had 60.
You can't have that. I had 60.
Oh, can't have everything.
That was Dan's opening.
61.
Bid.
Oh,
Chris, but if only you went the other way, because it's 59, Dan Rogers wins.
Oh, do you know? You know, Chris.
He's
Chris,
back with
close
a
your
bang.
Eyes. Close your eyes, Chris. You know, huh? You know, towards the end of the Fury fight, where he licks the blood off Wilder. Just imagine.
So close. I mean, that, what is another metaphor for that?
You've been Rogered.
You've been Rogered.
You know when you've been Rogered.
It's like you had a chance to knock him down, but he got up and then licked the blood off the back of your neck. 2-1. Spectacular.
Thank you,
good
David.
Game.
Thank you, David.
Hogan's back with a bang. He's made it more interested now. He's got back into the... he's starting to turn up for work and do his job, so to speak.
I've now also got a passing interest in how bad Gary Gardner is. It's okay. I'm off. After we finish this, I'm off just to look.
Can we just come up with a new game for the Gary Gardner pass?
Absolutely muck.
The pass out or something. 48.6%. That is sackable,
that's
surely.
That's a lot of groaning inside of football. That's,
Okay. Throw in.
Can you imagine if he had that completion rate for Villa?
It would make Ashley Westwood look like Iniesta.
Any last passing comments on the final as we make our way down there?
Believe.
And for how long do you think?
90 minutes plus stoppage time.
How many until you leave the stadium?
Well, off air we were talking about our respective websites get offers from betting companies, and the one particular
which I decline, but he loves them.
Oh, I actually reply. I'm best friends with many of them. But I was particularly drawn to the goal differential between the two teams on mention of how many goals. So they're 50 plus 57 goals better off.
So just put this in context. Dan gets an email. Oh, can you put this article on your site? Blah, blah, blah.
David told us to fuck off.
David told us to fuck off. And he gets the article. And how many, what is it? 25 reasons why Manchester City are going to win this final.
Yeah, basically. So I've obviously accepted that. But upon reading it, the realization that neither the gods nor the odds are in our favour.
Oh, that's good.
But that's the way we like
but
it.
But when we lift that trophy.
Exactly. It will be sweeter.
When Neil Taylor lifts that trophy. Because Nyland will have dropped it, obviously.
That is the final question on selection. Nyland or Rayner?
Nyland.
Neither Nyland.
Orian Nyland. Orian Nyland for the performance against...
It's written in the stars for him, isn't it?
I think you have to go with him because at the end of... I mean, his only poor performance, ironically, was against Manchester City, but any goalkeeper would have been peppered.
He was described as chocolate-wristed, I believe, on that.
Yeah. Rayner didn't actually have the greatest game against Southampton.
Nope, that's true.
And, you know, we wouldn't be in the final if it wasn't for Mr. Nyland because he's, you know, he's been... I think it's not as clear-cut as, oh, Guzan or Friedel, even though Guzan had been in the sticks through the earlier rounds, but you flapped so much in that semi against Blackburn when we beat them 6-4 that, I mean, you had no chance against Manchester United if you put Guzan in playing like that. But this, he's kind of earned it, really, because, you know, Rayner's just come out of nowhere, and I don't think he's that much of an upgrade. Because distribution, I think we need to go a bit more direct. We can't be fanning around at the back because we're just going to play ourselves into trouble. We're not good enough at this point in time to do that. We've got to cut out any potential margin for error has got to shrink.
That's going to be a lot of cutting.
Yeah, boot it! Just aim at their corner flag every pass.
Shoot.
Put it in Rose Ed for 90 minutes.
Oh. Nyland for me as well. I would give him a go.
I mean, if we're going to lose, we might as well lose by many, many, so you can say you were there and in spectacular fashion in years to come. No, it won't happen. It's fine. I'm positive.
What would
be
the worst way to go, though? Get smashed or get done by VAR in a cup final?
Why would you even prophesize?
Yeah, why?
Bud?
I think we got to score first. Hopefully...
Hopefully we
stay in it as long as possible and they get frustrated.
Agreed.
I think we need to score first. I mean, that's obvious, but I mean, you can score early and some people will say, well, that's just like taking a stick to a hornet's nest. But I think we've just got to wait. You know, we've got to do that, really. We've got to frustrate them. And if we wake up the hornet's nest, then so be it. Just raise the tempo. Let's do battle.
Hell yeah! Bring the cup home.
Yeah, I don't want a lame Arsenal final like the FA Cup because that was we didn't even lay a glove on them.
No.
And against Fulham, it was a bit tepid because we didn't even force a corner. So at least there's potential there, but we've got to take the very few chances we'll get.
We either need that 1994 spirit or, dare I say, 1996.
Can you imagine?
Right, anyway, let's end this because we're getting into fantasy land now. Please do sign up to be a patron if you can to get access to extra podcasts.
Don't forget your scatter cushions.
Support the show. I will finally get this cushion competition up to win the greatest prize of all. The My Old Man Said cushion, which isn't available, although people want it, so maybe will be available soon.
How we mocked the merchandise. How we mocked.
No, you didn't mock the merchandise. You just mocked your merchandise.
They're all...
You can shove your Christmas jumpers up your ass.
Easter eggs coming soon.
All right, please do follow the show on Spotify, Apple, or whatever podcast app that you use so you get notifications when it drops. Please do retweet and share when you see the social media for a show pop up. That's a great help to spread the word. And until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Right, send Rogers back to quarantine.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.